Hello, welcome to Cerebral Flex, episode 10. I'm gonna call it Torches, Pitchforks, Negro Fiends, and White Mobs. This episode is about all the black massacres where white mobs came and killed a bunch of black people essentially after World War I during the Reconstruction era, when they were allowed to vote or not so much, as you'll find out. Hello, we are your hosts and things. This is Jareth Blackstar and Nam One Sakati.
If you guys don't know who we are by now, man.
I hope so. Well, I mean, this might be their first experience.
This is true. And here I am laughing at the subject matter.
Virgin experience. Oh, he's laughing at you because you're a virgin.
Yes.
So yeah, we're going to talk about the black massacres that occurred mainly in the late 1800s and the early 1900s. And yeah, I'm going to let Jareth talk about some ontological expansiveness. Is that what it's called?
Yes, ontological expansiveness.
Very good.
All right. So the basic premise of this episode is, again, it's going to be about the whites massacring black people. We're probably going to be doing a series. We're not going to do them back to back, but it'll be spread throughout, kind of like how we've done our conspiracy theory videos and all of that stuff about ontological expansiveness, which is essentially the theory of it is, and it is just theory. But there are people who look into like critical race theory and all sorts of different sociological studies that have kind of noticed this trend through history. If you just look at the way that Caucasians have acted, they have this concept that all spaces should be owned by them. So they believe that the world is there to serve them. They believe that all spiritual spaces and cultures should be inhabited and owned by them. It's essentially, if you want to think of it allegorically, as capitalism run rampant. So white people think they should be able to come in, take over the North America, and continue to push the Native Americans further and further away, taking their land, taking their resources. And then eventually what happens is they go through this brief period of awareness of the sins that they have committed against whatever culture they've taken over. And then they start to slowly take aspects of that culture. So a lot of what you're seeing right now is people who are really getting into spirituality. You know, they're going out into the desert and they're smoking peyote at a Burning Man festival and stuff like that, and singing old Native American songs and trying to essentially emulate the Native American spirit after they have completely come and crushed the Native American spirit. They've murdered countless millions of them, taken their land away, continue to take their land away. And now they are taking different sacred parts of their culture that are not theirs. I'm not someone who particularly believes that any type of spiritual path is acceptable to, like, I guess, gatekeep. I think if you are interested in any type of religious practice, that you should be able to pursue it. But that's kind of separate from white people running around and singing old Native American prayers and stuff that they have no connection to and no initiation kind of into it. So, and that's all a part of ontological expansiveness, because again, they're taking over the physical space, and then there's this self-awareness and this guilt for what they've done. And then they slowly start integrating parts of that into white culture. And then it's kind of like seen as, it's disrespectful to whatever race they're taking it from. And two, they try to use this excuse of like, oh, well, we're trying to be more open-minded and all-encompassing and stuff like that. When really you have people who like Justin Timberlake, good example. He does a lot of R&B and stuff like that. But R&B is primarily a African-American musical genre. And so he's gotten a lot of flack for that. And I don't think that there's anything wrong if you want to if you want to perform R&B and be white, or you want to be like Eminem and be a rapper and be white, but you also have to be self-aware that you are stealing from another culture, and that you should be respectful of other cultural experiences and the fact that white people have essentially taken over the earth. So that's kind of like a brief overview of ontological expansiveness. That's kind of going to be the subject of this video and other videos that we might do like it. We're probably going to do like the Native American genocide. And we might talk about the slave trade at some point. We'll see where it goes. But today we're going to focus mainly on the black massacres that happened in Colfax in 1873 onward. Because I feel like most people, especially white people, don't really know about it, and we don't educate ourselves very well about it. It's a lack in our education system. It's also the government trying to sweep really bad things that white people have done under the rug. And we're going to go ahead and get into that now. Did I summarize that well enough?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, so cultural appropriation and ontological expansiveness are pretty much one and the same thing. In a way.
Just, yes. The argument for ontological expansiveness is just like white people in particular have this innate like nature where they feel like everything that they see should be theirs. And again, it's just theory for the most part. There's no way to prove it unless you just look at history and see that's the way that it's gone for thousands. Yeah,
there's no way to prove what Europeans have done unless you look at what they've done.
Right. And even if you go further back to ancient Rome, the Middle East, like, because I don't think we generally tend to think of people from the Middle East as Caucasian, but they are more Caucasian than they are African or Asian or Native American. They just have a slightly darker, I mean, there are some differences there, but they're still considered Caucasian mainly. So
anthropologically,
from the Middle East on, like, white people have ruled the world since Sumeria, the Ottoman empires, the Catholic Church, the Jews, the Romans, the Greeks, all white cultures.
Right. But I was talking to my wife about this, and I was saying that really, if you look at Caucasians and Asians, they were, well, and everyone was warring with one another since the, you know, dawn of time. But this whole going to new places and just treating them like nothing is a new thing. Because even slaves in Egypt and slaves in Rome, they weren't treated like the slaves in the U.S. and how the slaves were in West Africa after Liberia learned how to treat slaves like the U.S. did. So, I mean, this was the first real horrible treatment. I mean, other than the Arawak natives and, you know, South America when they brought the Indians from India. But, like, it was rare to treat people like they weren't people back then. They were still people. You know what I mean?
I mean, yes
and no. They weren't treated this. They didn't rape your wife and have kids with your wife and like, or maybe they did. Maybe it was always this gross.
It probably was always this gross because, I mean, it's the classic, the victor writes history scenario. I think especially when it comes to, and this could maybe be the future of another episode, but especially when it comes to the Catholic Church in particular, they were very good at propagandizing information and burning a lot of information, especially when it comes to the like Library of Alexandria. I don't think that the blame falls on the people that they say burned it down. I think it probably falls on the Catholic Church wanting a lot of information that would have exposed them for what they are. They wanted to get rid of that really quickly. The Vatican has a massive library underneath it with documents that span back thousands of years that nobody's allowed to read. And I'm very against gatekeeping information. That's why college should be free for everyone.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah, we're going to talk about only seven of the many massacres I read about, because there was 20 massacres just in 1919 alone. It was called the Red Summer, but we're going to start in 1873 in Colfax, Louisiana. All right, I got the screen. sometimes it was referred to as the Colfax Riot. It happened on Easter Sunday. How cute is that? April 13th, 1873. Like I said, Colfax, Louisiana, in the seat of Grant Parish. This information is on Wikipedia. It's also on many other sources from many other sources. Estimated 62 to 153 black militia men were killed while surrendering to a mob of former Confederate soldiers, Ku Klux Klan members, and this creepy group called the White League. And then they had to mention three white men also died in the confrontation. Anyway, so what happened was there's a contested election in 1872 for the governor of Louisiana. And a group of white Democrats, because back then the Democrats were the racists, not the Republicans. And we'll go into how they're both racist later on. white Democrats armed with rifles and small cannon overpowered Republican freemen, so black men that used to be slaves. And they formed a little militia, and they were trying to protect the courthouse. So black dudes were trying to protect the courthouse. White dudes surrounded them, murdered a bunch of them. And when they tried to surrender, they still just murdered the rest of them. How cool is that? And then, yeah, it's a creepy, nasty story. And that's what started all of the murders we're going to talk about, or all the tragedies. So what do you think about that one, Jareth?
Are you saying that white people didn't peacefully protest?
Absolutely not.
Weird.
Nope. It was, didn't they set it on fire? Did they set the courthouse on fire? Is that another one I'm mixing up with this one?
I don't remember that, but they may
have. Yeah, they just fired on them. Okay. Well, either way.
Yeah, no. So I guess first we'll jump into the Democrat thing. So I think by now everybody knows that neither of us like either of the two major political parties. You heard it a lot in, I can't remember if it was 2016 or 2020, because the years of Trump were a blur. In my mind, I was very inebriated during all of them because I just couldn't stand it. Still can't really stand it to this day. But the Democrats were much more Southern-based, and the Republican Conservative Party was much more Northern-based. So literally the maps flipped later on. And the Democrats were, obviously, they were from the South. They were from the losing side. Haha, Democrats lose all the time. And they were pretty formative in starting the Ku Klux Klan. Maybe not the politicians directly, but certain laws that were in place and stuff like that. So the Democrats were super, super racist. Then the Republicans with Nixon kind of got the Southern strategy going, because they were starting to lose all the time, because the Democrats suddenly became more self-aware and more progressive. Everybody likes to talk about FDR, but nobody likes to talk about FDR putting Asian Americans in internment camps. Democrats became better on social issues. Republicans became worse on social issues because the South is, unfortunately, for the most part, not saying every Southerner is, but the South is inherently racist. There's Confederate pride. People who want to wave Confederate flags around as part of their heritage. Well, that heritage is your ancestors were fighting against the Union to protect their right to literally own people to work their cotton fields. And there will be people who will be like, well, no, you can't. There's that famous meme of the guy who's like, my family just owned a farm back then. Do you know how expensive a slave was? Bud. Showing your colors. So that South is inherently racist, unfortunately. I hate to generalize it, but it's very racist down there. And the maps just flipped. But if you look at the actual policies that both parties promote, like our current president, who is a Democrat, has worked with people who actively tried to stop black kids from segregating into schools. He worked with segregationists. And his vice president, Kamala Harris, called him out for that shit. And people were like, oh, damn, Kamala's calling Joe Biden a racist. And now she's his vice president. Because really, both parties don't actually give a shit about social issues. Republicans, you kind of got to respect them because they're just more open about their blatant racism and not giving a fuck. Whereas Democrats are much more nefarious and they use social issues to try to get people to support their votes. And then they start doing shady shit that hurts Black communities, Native American communities, and white communities. And I think really what we want to touch on here is the fact that rich white men are what typically tend to cause confliction between the poor classes when it comes to racism.
All right.
So, yeah.
Calm down. Calm down.
Whoa. Sorry.
Going back to, I was going to say that fire thing. I got that from that Washington Post article called Tulsa Isn't the Only Race Massacre You Were Never Taught in School. And Here Are Others by Gillian Brockell from June 1st of this year. So, yeah, that's where these stories we're going to talk about came from. But, yeah, you're entirely right, Jareth, on everything you said. What's going on?
I usually am.
You're adding tech.
I am. Because
head apparatus.
Having trouble hearing you, but I don't want to turn it up and have an echo. But yeah, no, I usually am. I usually think about things before I say them. Because I used to not think about things before I said them all the time. And I regret a lot of those things. So yeah, I try to educate myself so I don't come off as an ignorant idiot.
Very good. Yeah, I halfway do that. Sometimes I just speak from the hip. Sometimes I trumpet. Sometimes I just, something pisses me off and I just say what I say. And then later I backtrack. I'm like, I should have probably not said that.
I witnessed one of those once. That was really good. I liked that. I don't think you regretted telling that old white man that he was wrong about global warming.
Oh my God. Yeah.
You remember that?
Like a drunken bar argument.
Yes. Yeah. It was very amusing. It was very amusing.
Yeah. Drunken conservative telling me that humans don't hurt the planet and that
he was part of the what do you call it? I can't remember what he said he was part of, but he was part of a lot of studies that showed that the literature on the polar ice caps melting was
he was saying like all the research was bought. Like all the people that said that global warming was real or just paid off. Anyway,
we're getting sidetracked.
Black people being slaughtered. That's what we're talking about. So
yes.
We just spoke about Colfax, Louisiana. That's what popped it all off. And we're going to Wilmington, North Carolina now.
Are we sure that Colfax was like the Colfax was the first big one, right? Because the reason for Colfax was because they voted.
Yeah.
So again, like just to touch on it briefly. So you have these white people who are upset now that the Ku Klux Klan and the White League, they're upset that Black people are now seen as individuals. They're no longer property. And they don't like that. They don't like it. They don't want it. Those Black people should be working on their farm still. And so they're given some type of political power. And what do white people do? They freak the fuck out and they start going on a rampage, going into the streets, destroying property, wielding weapons, and killing people and taking the law into their own hands.
They prayed to the spirit of Karen. And they went to the streets.
So the point that we're going to be trying to emphasize here for uneducated white people, another interesting part on ontological expansiveness, too, is that you will have white people who will claim to be allies to people who have certain experiences, but then get angry when those people with certain experiences call them out for their privilege, which is inherently racist, because you should recognize that as a white person, you do have more advantages. I do have more advantages than Colin because I am white. I just do. He is half white, so he has more privileges than somebody who's not half white. That's just something that happens in the real world. And if you cannot accept that, well, you are being racist.
The same thing is true for gender. And if you don't see that as a male, you have it easier in society and you're not sexualized all the time like a piece of meat. And everywhere you go, you're not like looked at and stared at. And we're nasty. Men are disgusting, but men own everything. Like we are the ones that pretty much are the CEOs. There's hardly any like female CEOs and stuff. Like the percentage. But
we're also not trying to say that there aren't nasty females too, because Kamala Harris right now is the second most powerful person in the world. And if you look at her career, she's a disgusting human being. So
it's, there's nasty black people too. I mean, she sums up both. So yeah. It's like, whatever.
but so again, yep. Colfax is white people throwing a hissy fit, taking the law into their own hands. And we're going to see this time and time and time again with each of these. So we're going to talk about each of them. And I'm going to try to make you guys realize that when Black Lives Matter go into the streets, and if they get a little mad and you say they're hurting their community, when really all they're burning down is a Target, that's not hurting their community. Because what we're also going to see, which we'll go into more, is black people time and time again have built wealth, and white people come in and they destroy it. Black people don't own wealth in this country. A lot of white people don't own wealth in this country either, just because the middle class has slowly been eradicated. But a lot more white people have wealth than black communities, than Native American communities, than even Asian communities or Middle Eastern communities in the United States, because of white supremacy and the fact that anytime black people would get ahead and do something good, somebody would claim, oh, this black guy looked at this woman funny, or oh, this black guy tried to rape this white girl, and they would go in and they would destroy everything in a riot. So this argument about Black Lives Matter people going in and protesting and breaking into Walmarts and stealing TVs and stuff like that and wrecking their communities, Walmart's not part of your community. Walmart's a big corporation that doesn't pay taxes.
I mean, I honestly don't like any looting or burning or damaging of property for any reason. I feel like it takes away from their argument.
It does. But also, you have to look at it from the perspective of somebody who is, again, they don't have any wealth. They don't have anything
to build. Oh, no, I know why they're angry. I know why they're doing what they're doing. I completely empathize. I'm just saying that they're also taking away from another family, whether they be white or black or anything else. There's a lot of people that work at that Target. There's a lot of people that Target affects economically. So it's like there's a lot of people that aren't going to eat because you are mad that you don't get to eat. So it's like, it doesn't really make sense for me to like burn down people's place of like their jobs. You're basically taking away their job.
Because if you burn down a Target, they're going to build the Target back up.
Right. Target's but what about the bagger at Target? What about the bagger that worked at Target? You think they're going to take the time and give him like severance pay while they're building a new one? Or they're going to transfer him to some other Target to work? You think they're going to give a shit?
No, they're going to have him back in their stocking shelves instead of bagging.
Okay, but like there's what I'm trying to say is, what if he just loses his job entirely?
Oh, yeah, no, that's definitely possible. My point was more of the fact that you can't have this double standard of, well, black people should protest peacefully and not burn down villages. Oh, yeah, totally. Every time that this has happened, white people have done the exact same thing to black people with black businesses, and Target and Walmart and all these big places aren't, they're not black businesses. They're big corporations that can afford to like, you steal everything from a Target, they're going to have that shit stocked within a couple weeks again. Like now private businesses that people were going into and burning, there were people who did own private businesses that were affected by looters and stuff like that. But also another issue that we won't talk about this for too much longer because we want to get into these massacres, but a lot of it was also bad faith actors, like people going in who were conservatives and stuff, trying to rile people up. Plenty of videos of people wearing masks and stuff like that. Kyle Rittenhouse is a good example, going in and trying to cause a ruckus and try to make things more violent. And the argument of black people protesting especially irritates me, because you don't hear it as much when it comes to other communities. It seems to be primarily based on black people protesting. It very much irritates me because nothing they do is ever seen as right. You can't take a knee during the national anthem because that's disrespectful. But you can't go riot in the streets when black people are being indiscriminately killed by white cops.
The only thing I don't like is burning public property that affects the taxpayer, because that's just affecting everyone, and like twerking on cop cars and like all this stupid shit I've seen lately. Like, if you're going to protest, do it in a respectful manner so that we get rights, so they actually listen. If we're doing it in a dumbass manner, they're not going to listen. So that's all I got to say. I mean, if you're going out there and you're being outlandish and obnoxious, they're not going to give a shit about what you want.
And I mean, to your point, Martin Luther King Jr., he went out, because white people love to talk about him a lot. He did go out and he protested peacefully, and they still didn't take him seriously.
Well, exactly. But like, he wore a suit. He had respect. He looked good. Like, these people out here now are just, they look like thugs. So it's like, how are you going to get any respect? I want to go back to the suit days where we look good, where we were like organized, where, you know, we marched in solidarity and they like unleashed the dogs on us. And they're the only ones that look like an asshole. But if you're twerking on a cop car, you also look like an asshole. So it's like, you know, I want the black organization from the past. But anyway, getting to the massacres. Wilmington, North Carolina. What do you think? You want to go over that one?
Yeah, go ahead. Do your brief little thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was 1998 in Wilmington, North Carolina. It was a warm, sunny day. No. Some white supremacists threw a coup and overturned the results of a local election. They were mad because this guy was elected, and they were like, nah, he doesn't have our interests at heart. So they like threw a coup, overturned the election entirely. That's actually the only instance in the United States of America where people overthrew a elected official in a violent manner.
They tried earlier this year.
And hey, while they were doing that, they just also happened to kill dozens of black people. And they burned down Wilmington's rich black sector, kind of like Tulsa, which we'll talk about later. But many families were driven out into the woods, and some left by train, and none returned.
So the person that they were overthrowing, was he black, or he was just somebody they didn't like?
No, he might have been a Negro lover.
Oh, so why? So they performed this coup d'etat,
yeah,
and they just wound up killing black people for no reason. Like, why were black people killed?
You know, I should have read more about that. I should have looked into it more. But what, from my understanding, is the black people were happy with the elected official, and you know, he was allowing them to prosper, and that he was working with them.
All right. Well, here, we'll go into the Wikipedia article.
Real quick. Yeah. Let's look into it.
All right. So I guess I'll steal the screen since I'm going to do the reading. Yeah. All right. So
I mean, I can help.
So Wilmington, insurrection of Wilmington, was in 1898. It was also known as the Wilmington Massacre of 1898 or the Wilmington Coup of 1898.
A lot of names.
It was a mass riot and insurrection. Oh, and my computer's going to be stupid. Sorry.
Oh, it's probably my fault.
Carried out by white supremacists. And no, it's not your fault. My Google Chrome has been being stupid lately. Anyway, so Wilmington was a mass riot and insurrection carried out by white supremacists in Wilmington, North Carolina, on Thursday, November 10th of 1898. The white press in Wilmington originally described the event as a race riot caused by black people, as was typical of such events. Since the late 20th century and further study, the insurrection has been characterized as a coup d'etat, the violent overthrow of a duly elected government by a group of white supremacists. Multiple causes brought it about. The coup is a result of the state's white Southern Democrats conspiring and leading a mob of 2,000 white men. No.
2,000. And because it was a fusionist government. It was a biracial government.
White men were a mob? Weird. Overthrow the legitimately elected.
That's a lot.
Yeah. I don't think that's a mob anymore. That's something else. Yeah. It's a mini army, a legion, maybe. I think a legion's made up of 2,000 people. So they were led by the Southern Democrats to overthrow the legitimately elected local fusionist. I'm not sure what a fusionist is.
It's a biracial,
government in Wilmington. They expelled opposition, black and white political leaders from the city, destroyed the property and businesses of black citizens built up since the Civil War. Weird.
So,
including the only black newspaper in the city, and killed an estimated 60 to more than 300 people. It has been described as the only incident of its kind in American history, like you were saying, because of other incidents of late Reconstruction era violence. It did not result in the direct removal and replacement of elected officials by unelected individuals.
So the Fusionist Party is a cross-racial coalition, mostly black Republicans and white populist party members who cooperated in the state elections and state government between 1894 and 1900. And while they involved Republicans and populists maintained separate organizations and did not affiliate their united actions with a separate third party, the group's cooperation was labeled fusion or fusionist by its Democratic opponents in the middle to late 1880s. It just sounds like they were confused.
Right. So the Wilmington coup is considered a turning point in the post-Reconstruction North Carolina politics. It was part of an era of more severe racial segregation and effective disenfranchisement of African Americans throughout the South, which had been underway since the passage of a new constitution in Mississippi, where I was born. Oh my God. They literally might be the most racist state in America. Between them and Louisiana, which raised barriers to the registration of black voters. So we're already starting to see black people not having the right to vote or making up gerrymandering and stuff like that. This is starting in 1890. We are already starting this. Other states soon passed similar laws. And so let's see if we can't find out why exactly they started just murdering black people, because
I mean, they were black Republicans in the Fusionist Party. So
I'm wondering, though, so they were upset by the governor who was elected. So it's because he was part of the Fusionist Party with black people that they got upset.
Nigger lover. Yeah, they went out with their torches and pitchforks. No, there's a picture of them on Wikipedia with a ton of white rifles. It's crazy. At least they all were wearing suits. See, people get respect when they wear suits. But yeah, I mean, it was a time where black people didn't have any rights, and all of a sudden they were given rights, and then there are a bunch of people like, no, we don't like that. Just like I've been hearing Trump supporters say that if Trump gets assassinated, like that, the white militias will go nuts and you'll see violence in this country the likes of you never seen before. And I was like, I'd like to observe that. I'd actually like to see that, because I think that would solidify the ignorance of that side. I'd like them to go out and just be absolute morons.
I mean,
you know, cause some shit, stir up some shit.
So
the world would come out knowing who's the idiot.
Having done podcasts and stuff so far on research into like conspiracies and stuff like that, and looking into things like the bombings in Oklahoma City, just realizing how deep white militias run in this country is pretty terrifying. I would say that white militias in this country are akin to probably like the mob back when they had power in the Prohibition era. They have a vast network. They have a lot of guns, and they have a lot of really radical people. And when it comes to white militiamen, they are also very racist. All of Timothy McVeigh, Ruby Ridge, all that was these super conservative guys who you don't ever hear this part of the story because there was this terrorist attack and this overreach by the government. But a lot of these guys, and a lot of the reason especially Oklahoma City happened, is because white nationalists were involved and the government didn't want to go in and remove these militiamen and start a huge civil war again. which is why McVay didn't get caught until after the bombing had happened, because there's information that said that they knew that the bombing was going to happen. And the government is just scared of white militiamen, because as we see here, anytime they get pissed off, they just go in and start murdering people indiscriminately. And the white militia has grown as the country's grown. And it would be very scary if Trump were assassinated and the white militias were released. It would not be good. It would be civil war.
Well, no, of course it wouldn't be good. I think it would just solidify how stupid they are.
They're stupid, but they're also very violent, and there would be a lot of unnecessary death.
Right. But like, imagine how that would affect the economy. Imagine how that would affect our place in world on the world stage. I mean, we already lost a lot of respect after, I mean, even Obama to Trump to now we have a guy talking about 9-year-olds with, you know, her legs crossed and shit. It's like, you didn't see that one anyway.
No.
Yeah. We just have a series.
I stopped paying attention to politics probably 2 months ago because I was just too depressed about it.
Yeah. It's too much. It's too much. But yeah, we're already not respected. So if a bunch of racists went rampant, I'm pretty sure the world would look at us like, see, they're morons.
Right.
That country's full of morons. I'm pretty sure they already think that, but like, I think that would solidify it.
I think they think that too. All right. So that was Wilmington. Yep. It looks like.
So yeah, the next one's my favorite one.
Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, from that article.
Okay, go ahead.
It's so amazing. So it's the only one where the black people won.
Okay, why don't you go into it and why it's your favorite?
Well, that's the reason, because it's a victory.
Okay.
So I call it the Washington, D.C. victory of 1919. So media caused hysteria. For weeks, police and press, including Washington Post, whipped up hysteria for alleged Negro fiend attacking white women. That's a common story with these tragedies. They just say some black guy was looking at a woman wrong, or the, you know, in, like in John Travolta's White Man's Burden. Great movie. Go check it out. But anyway, things boiled over July 19th of 1919. It's a cool number, with white posses hunting black men. And then the violence lasted for nearly a week. And so basically, first of all, for the beginning of it, they were beating a ton of black people with bricks and like large objects and like mutilating them. And so the black people and the police didn't intervene, and they didn't even do anything. And so the black people started protecting themselves and, you know, shooting at and beating up any white people that came in the black neighborhoods. And then all the white mobs started increasing and it got pretty crazy. But the black people, because a lot of them just came back, I think a lot of them were veterans from World War One, and they were, a lot of them were returning vets from World War One, and they weren't about to take no shit. So like, they started whooping the crap out of the white mobs, and they won. And I think that's amazing. Sorry, my Siri thinks I'm talking to her for some reason. Anyway, I'm not talking to you.
All right. And that's part of the so that was in 1919.
Yeah, it was part of the Red Summer, the 20 massacres of 1919.
So we're going to get into the Red Summer. So just a little background into what the Red Summer was. Excuse me, let me clear my throat there. All right, so with the mobilization of troops for World War One, and with immigration from Europe cut off because World War One, the industrial cities of the American Northeast and Midwest were experiencing severe labor shortages, very severe. So as a result, northern manufacturers recruited throughout the South, from which an exodus of workers started to ensue. And by 1919, an estimated 500,000 African Americans had immigrated from the southern United States to industrial cities of the Northeast and Midwest. And the first wave of the Great Migration. Ooh, can't read today. So African American workers, they filled new positions in expanding industries such as railroads, as well as many existing jobs held formerly by the whites. In some cities, they were hired as strike breakers. That's messed up, especially during the strikes of 1917. This increased resentment against blacks among the working class whites, immigrants, and first generation Americans. So that's kind of a little bit of a background. White people were getting pissed off because the blacks were coming in and taking their jobs away from them because they were all off fighting in the world. Because
they took their jobs.
So the racism in the Red Scare, which was in the summer of 1917, was a violent racial riot against blacks due to labor tensions that broke out in East St. Louis, Illinois, and Houston, Texas. Following the war, rapid demobilization of the military without a plan for absorbing the veterans into the job market, sounds exactly like our government, and the removal of price controls led to unemployment and inflation that increased competition for jobs. So during the first Red Scare of 1919 to 1920, and following the 1917 Russian Revolution, of the anti-Bolshevik sentiment in the United States quickly started to be followed by an anti-German sentiment arising in the war years. Many politicians and government officials, together with much of the press and public, feared an imminent attempt to overthrow the U.S. government to create a new regime modeled on that of the Soviets, because the Soviets were scary to the United States.
We always have an enemy, like 1984. It's like, oh, there's the communists. Oh, it's the witches. Yep. Oh, it's the Islam. It's Islam now. Oh no, it's starting to be
Russia part two again.
Yeah, right. We're doing Russia again.
So authorities viewed with alarm African Americans' advocacy of racial equality, labor rights, and the rights of victims of mobs to defend themselves. In a private conversation in 1919, President Woodrow Wilson said, "The American Negro returning from abroad would be the greatest medium in conveying Bolshevism to America." Other whites expressed a wide range of opinions, some anticipating unsettled times, and others seeing no signs of tension.
You have to explain what that is.
Bolshevism? What, yeah. We could do a whole episode on the Bolsheviks in Russia. Bolsheviks, they were a radical, far left revolutionary Marxist party. They essentially overthrew.
I read about them. All right, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, they essentially overthrew the Russian Tsar at the time, which started the Soviet Union, which is how you got Lenin, and then Lenin was betrayed by Stalin, and that's how Stalin was in power in World War II. So Russia was in a state of chaos at the time of World War I because Tsar. I want to say it's Alexander. I don't know. I'm not going to look it up right now because we're not talking about Russia. But anyway, the Bolsheviks were the far left Marxist party that created a revolution that overthrew the Tsar and his family and took control of the Russian government. And so in America during the time, this is 1917 to 1919, we're fresh off the heels of World War I. You have the Bolsheviks who have overthrown the Russian government. Communism is pretty widespread throughout the United States at this point because of the Bolsheviks, because the communist ideology was taking the means of production back for the workers instead of the upper crust of society having it. So around a lot of the strikes and stuff at time, which is why I'm sure a lot of black people were strike breakers, during a lot of the strikes at the times that the workers were having was due to a lot of them were due to people who were reading the Communist Manifesto and knew what was going on with the Bolshevism and all that. If you watch Peaky Blinders, you can kind of get an idea of it because it's right around that time.
Yeah.
In a lot of the warehouses, there's talks about communism and stuff like that. So it's pretty widespread.
Well, like the beatniks in the U.S. were, a lot of them were communists as well, right?
Right, right. So there was this communist sentiment, which they, for whatever reason, we still think is around today, which it is not. Communism as it existed in the Bolshevik Russia it's been proven to be demonstrably not a good thing. So like when people say that Democrats like Biden are social or are they're communists, they're not. And people, no one's advocating for communism. They're advocating for strong social safety nets like most of Europe has. So that's Bolshevism in a nutshell. So essentially what they're trying to say here is that it was right off the heels of World War I. They didn't have a plan for the veterans to come back. Most of the veterans were white, again, because we were still being racist assholes. And Woodrow Wilson himself said that the black people asking for racial equality and labor rights and the rights of victims to defend themselves during mobs attacking them, that was going to be like Bolshevism if black people continued to gain power. So that's kind of what set it off, is like you have this sentiment at the highest echelons of the government.
And that's probably like, why it's Washington, D.C., and the cops didn't even do anything. And the only thing that actually stopped that riot was a huge summer rain.
Exactly.
That's probably the weirdest part. God himself was like, this is dumb. Stop it.
No, it wasn't God.
He was like, the whites are losing. I must stop this.
I got nothing for that one.
The white lord
I was gonna make some snarky comment about how there's many different entities out there that could have stopped it, but
nope. The white lord came down.
Jesus himself went to his daddy and he said, even though Jesus was a black man, or would have been a black man, he went to his daddy and he said, "Hey, those whites are losing." And We can't let the whites lose because they're.
He drew up a white league gang sign.
All right. So the early riots were in April, started on April 13th through July 14th. So on April 13th, we had a rural Georgia riot. We had a rural Georgia. It was Jenkins County. There was a riot that led to 6 deaths as well as the destruction of various properties by arson, including Garswell Grove Baptist Church and 3 black Masonic lodges in Millen, Georgia. They went after the Masons.
Even the Masons.
Wow.
No one's safe.
That's fucked up.
Freemasons. I saw a black Eastern Star lady the other day. Pentagrams all over her car, and she was driving some bucket. I'm like, what are you doing? They don't care of you.
No, they don't. So then in May 10th, we had the Charleston riot, which resulted in the injury of 5 white men and 18 black men, along with the death of 3 others, Isaac Doctor, William Brown, and James Talbot. All the guys who died were black. Following the riot, the city of Charleston, South Carolina, imposed martial law. A naval investigation found that 4 U.S. sailors and 1 civilian, all white men, initiated the riot. Weird. Early July, a white race riot in Longview, Texas, led to the deaths of at least 4 men and destroyed African-American housing district in the town. On July 3rd, local police in Brisbee, Arizona, attacked.
These are all Red Summer ones?
Yep. Attacked the 10th U.S. Cavalry, an African-American unit known as the Buffalo Soldiers, formed in 1866. And on July 14th, the Garfield Park riot took place in Garfield Park, Indianapolis, where multiple people, including a 7-year-old girl, were wounded when gunfire broke out. So then we get to Washington, D.C. and Norfolk. That was on July 19th through the 23rd. At the beginning of July 19th, Washington, D.C. saw 4 days of mob violence against black individuals, which we went over. Then we had Chicago riots. Those were from July 27th to August 12th. Beginning on July 27th, the Chicago race riot marked the greatest massacre of the Red Summer. Chicago's beaches along Lake Michigan, they were segregated by custom. When Eugene Williams, a black youth, swam into the area on the south side, customarily used by whites, he was stoned and drowned. Can't be going where the whites are. Chicago police refused to take action against the attackers. Thus, young black men responded with violence, lasting for 13 days, with white mobs led by the ethnic Irish. White mob destroyed hundreds of mostly black homes and businesses on the south side of Chicago. The state of Illinois called in their militia. Force of 7 regiments, several thousand men to restore order. The resulting casualties of the riots included 38 fatalities, 23 blacks and 15 whites, 527 injured, and 1,000 black families left homeless. Other accounts reported 50 people were killed, with unofficial numbers and rumors reporting even more. And then on August 12th, at their annual convention in the Northeastern Federation of Colored Women's Club, They denounced the rioting and burning of Negroes' homes, asking President Wilson to use every means within your power to stop rioting in Chicago and the propaganda used to incite such riots. By the end of August, the NAACP protested again to the White House, noting the attack to the organization's secretary in Austin, Texas, the previous week. Their telegram read, "The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People respectfully inquires how long the federal government under your administration tends to tolerate such anarchy in the United States." And then on August 30th to 31st, you had the Knoxville riot in Tennessee that broke out after the arrest of a black suspect on the suspicion of murdering a white lady. Searching the prisoner, a lynch mob stormed the county jail, where they liberated 16 white prisoners, including suspected murderers. The mob attacked the African-American business district, where they fought against the district's black business owners, leaving at least 7 dead and wounding 20 people. So, Omaha, September 28th through the 29th, was a race riot.
Erupted. You might as well just start listing them like that.
What?
Location, date. It was just a shitty summer, yeah. Man.
So shitty summer. That erupted after 10,000 ethnic whites from South Omaha attacked and burned down the county courthouse to force the release of a black prisoner accused of raping a white woman. The mob lynched the suspect, Will Brown, hanging him and burning his body. You can actually see a picture of it on Wikipedia if you want to look that up and remember that forever.
And traumatize yourself.
The group, you should traumatize yourself. If you're gonna traumatize yourself, you should at least do it for good causes, not bad ones. The group
welcome
then spread
to
out.
Cerebral Flex, where we want you to be traumatized.
Trigger warning, 40 minutes in. Acting, the group then spread out, attacking black neighborhoods and stores on the north side, destroying property valuing more than $1 million. Once the mayor and governor appealed for help from the federal government, they sent U.S. troops from nearby forts, who were commanded by Major General Leonard Wood, a friend of Theodore Roosevelt, and a leading candidate for the Republican nomination for president in 1920. And then we're going to end it off on the Red Summer with the Elaine Massacre in Wilmington in September 30th through November. On September 30th, a massacre broke out against blacks in Elaine Phillips County, Arkansas, being distinct for having occurred in the rural South rather than a city. The event erupted from the resistance of the white minority against the organization of labor by black sharecroppers, along with a fear of socialism, because the Red Scare was going to take over the nation. Planters opposed such efforts to organize and thus try to disrupt their meetings in the local chapter of the Progressive Farmers and Household Union of America. In a confrontation, a white man was fatally shot and another wounded. The planters formed a militia to arrest the African-American farmers, and hundreds of whites came from the region. They acted as a mob, attacking black people over 2 days at random. During the riot, the mob killed an estimated 100 to 237 black people, while 5 whites also died in the violence. Arkansas governor Charles William Rowe appointed a committee of 7 composed of prominent local white businessmen to investigate. The committee would conclude that the sharecroppers union was a socialist enterprise and established for the purpose of banding Negroes together for the killing of white people. The report generated such headlines as following in the Dallas Morning News: Negro seized in Arkansas riots confessed to widespread plot planned massacre of whites today. Several agents of the Justice Department's Bureau of Investigation spent a week interviewing participants, though speaking to no sharecroppers. The Bureau also reviewed documents, filing a total of 9 reports, stating there was no evidence of a conspiracy of the sharecroppers to murder anyone. The local government tried 79 black people, who were all convicted by all white juries, and 12 were sentenced to death for murder. As Arkansas and southern states had disenfranchised most black people at the turn of the 20th century, they could not vote, run for political office, or serve on juries. The remainder of the defendants were sentenced to prison terms of up to 21 years. Appeals of the convictions of 6 of the defendants went to the U.S. Supreme Court, which reversed the verdicts due to failure of the court to provide due process. This was a precedent for heightened federal oversight of defendants' right in the conduct of state criminal cases. And then on November 13th, you had the Wilmington race riot, which was a violent riot between the white and black residents of Wilmington, Delaware.
Wilmington's a popular one.
Yep.
So basically, in 1919, a bunch of people wanted fair pay. A bunch of black people wanted to be paid their, you know, due payment for their labor. And they also wanted to vote. That's really how we can sum up this entire time period.
Yes. The Red Scare was used as a way to get white people all scared about the socialism and to hate black people more. And it seems like a lot of it was done by people in the upper echelons of government.
You don't like your blurriness?
No, I don't like it.
It has a kind of cool effect, though.
All right.
It's kind of like art. Looks like art.
Looks like anyway, art. Yeah. All right.
Did you say that Ocoee, Florida one?
Nope.
Because you're still That's in 1919, one. Right?
Yep. We just ended right. the Red Summer. We're
Ocoee, Florida.
Yeah.
So after the Red Summer and all that bullshit, Ocoee, Florida happened in 1920. There's a presidential election, which white women voted for the first time. So that was cool. But for black Americans, it was more of the same shit. Jim Crow, disenfranchisement. And when local black men and women attempted to vote, white mobs responded by burning a black church and killing at least 6 people. But the people on the ground and the black people said there was like 60 killed. And then there was a mass grave. The survivors said that there was a bunch of bodies dumped into a mass grave. So yeah, good for you, Ocoee, Florida, 1920.
Yep. And then we go to
Tulsa. Everybody should know about Tulsa now. It finally is getting talked about. Even Biden opened his mouth about it. First time president even acknowledged that shit.
I mean, if you want to know about Tulsa, there's lots of good information on it. I think a lot of people, it came into the popular consciousness because of the HBO show Watchmen. They depicted the Tulsa massacre. And that came out right before the whole COVID thing and George Floyd's death. So that was interesting how that was kind of like topical. But so Tulsa, it was when a white mob descended on Black Wall Street. So Tulsa, Oklahoma, they built up this black people had finally built wealth. They had wealth. They had money. They're building a community. They had a Black Wall Street, a prosperous black neighborhood. That's when all the black people could afford suits and, you know, things were good. So the reason that got set off, which I don't want to misspeak, so let me look it up real quick. I want to say it was a white woman.
Yeah,
I mean, that a black boy tried to rape her.
Yeah, he was riding the elevator with her.
Yeah.
And something jostled the elevator, he said, and like he, you know, fell on her or like bumped into her or something. And she must have complained. Oh, yeah, she screamed. And then, yeah, basically the story went crazy. The black people in the area didn't even know anything about it at the time. They didn't know that like the white hysteria was happening in the background. And then this huge mob ascended on Black Wall Street.
All right,
and,
so
killed 300 people.
The massacre began on Memorial Day weekend after 19-year-old Dick Rowland, a black shoe shiner, was accused of assaulting Sarah Page, a 17-year-old white elevator operator, on the nearby Drexel building. So he was taken into custody. All right, he was arrested. Rumors spread through the city that Rowland was to be lynched. So upon hearing that report that this black guy tried to rape or hurt this white elevator operator, hundreds of white men gathered around the jail where Rowland was being kept, and a group of 75 black men decided to come down as well because the rumors had spread that he was going to be lynched. Some of them were armed, and they arrived at the jail in order to ensure that Rowland would not be lynched. All right, so the rumors going around, this black boy, he touched this white girl. Let's get down to the county jail and lynch him. Black people are like, nope, no, we're going to make sure that he doesn't get lynched. Due process, right? The sheriff persuaded the group to leave the jail, assuring them he had the situation in order and under control. And then someone fired a shot. And then, according to the sheriff, all hell broke loose. At the end of the exchange of fire, 12 people were dead, 10 white and 2 blacks. So the blacks won that one. As news of these deaths spread throughout the city, mob violence exploded. White rioters rampaged through the black neighborhood that night and the next morning, killing men and women and burning and looting stores and homes. Around noon on June 1st, the Oklahoma National Guard imposed martial law, ending the massacre. But an interesting thing, a lot of these white mob residents, many of them were deputized and given weapons by the city officials, and they attacked these black residents after they had killed 10 white men. So again, the scenario is this young black man, he gets accused of sexually assaulting someone. The white people go down to the jailhouse to lynch him. Black men go down to the jailhouse to be like, no, you're not going to lynch him. He's going to, you know, have his day in court and see. They come armed. Someone fires a shot. We don't even speculate on who, because it doesn't matter at the end of the day. Somebody fired a shot because it was a contentious situation, and more white people were killed than more black people. And so then the whites took that as a sign of aggression. They took their guns. They went into Tulsa. They flew planes into Tulsa, and they dropped bombs on Black Wall Street. They destroyed the city and left about 10,000 black people homeless. There was property damage that amounted to $1.5 million in real estate and $750,000 in personal property, the equivalent of about $32.65 million in today's money.
That's not that much.
For black people, it is.
Yeah, I mean, right. If there's a black city right now,
right,
and they blew up 32 point whatever million dollars worth of stuff, that's still not much of a white city. Like, think of any downtown Manhattan where most of the people are, you know, stock market and everyone else. You rarely see brown people there. But anyway,
so
whatever.
A lot of black people, they lost their homes. People were murdered. It was extremely racist, and a lot of them left Tulsa. And it was interesting because for several decades, these schools did not teach anything about it. A lot of people today still don't know about it.
The only reason it's in normal conversation, well, not even normal conversation, probably, for those that are slightly woke conversations, is because they found the mass grave. That's the only reason that they're even talking about it. They uncovered, you know, evidence no one can deny now, so they have to talk about it.
Right.
And definitely look into Tulsa if you don't know about that one yet. That one's big.
And then the next one, which is the last one we'll talk about, is Rosewood, Florida. That was in 1923. So for Rosewood,
is another successful black community.
It was another successful black community.
They were just kicking it in the Florida pine woods. Just kicking it. You know, like J. Cole's neighborhood. So.
Yes. So the Rosewood Massacre, it was, again, as these all have been, racially motivated massacre of black people and destruction of a black town that took place during the first week of January 1923 in rural Levy County, Florida. At least 6 black people and 2 white people were killed, though eyewitness accounts suggested a higher death toll of 27 to 150, which it could be, because we just threw all these bodies in mass graves. The town of Rosewood was destroyed.
Supposed assault of a white woman.
Yep.
They didn't even come up with better scenarios. Like, just come up with better shit.
Yeah.
You can't just keep using the same thing.
Yeah. So Florida had an especially high rate of lynchings of black men in the years before this massacre, including a well-publicized incident in December of 1922. So before the massacre, the town of Rosewood had been a quiet, primarily black, self-sufficient whistle stop on the Seaboard Airline Railway. Trouble began when a white man from several nearby towns lynched a black Rosewood resident because of accusations of a white woman in nearby Sumner had been assaulted by a black drifter. A mob of several hundred whites combed the countryside hunting for black people and burned almost every structure in Rosewood. Survivors from the town hid for several days in nearby swamps until they were evacuated by train and car to larger towns. No arrests were made for what happened in Rosewood. No,
I thought you were going to continue that southern accent.
Yeah, I kind of slipped out there. Like, yeah, I said, I'm from Mississippi. I am from Mississippi, so.
You were talking about all of the massacres and you had to use a southern accent.
I went from Mississippi to the south side of Chicago to the suburbs of northern Illinois. It's been an interesting journey. That is the majority of them. And that's not even talking about the the lynchings of people like Emmett Till, all the mass riots that we've had because of police brutality and white people just murdering black people indiscriminately. Again, and Emmett Till is particularly egregious because he was 15, right? 15, 16. And the only reason he was hurt is because he whistled at a white lady.
Or did he?
Do that.
Or did he even?
Or did he even? Who knows?
Right.
I like Emmett Till because his mother is a good example of a strong advocate for the rights of disenfranchised people, because she very easily could have not let the news know what had happened to her son, because it was just a thing that happened all the time. And she said, no, let them see what they did to my baby. Let them see what they did. And it shocked a lot of people when they saw what they had done. And to this day, there's still a lot of racism. Obviously, racism hasn't gone down at all. It's propagated by the U.S. government, partially by certain laws they enact with gerrymandering so that black people have a harder time voting. Black people are disproportionately thrown in prison more. They receive longer sentences than whites. There's lots of different issues when it comes to the way that America treats its African-American community. We haven't let them build up. They haven't built another Rosewood or Tulsa since then, because anytime they've built wealth, it gets destroyed. And it really is a big scar on our nation. This nation is built on the corpses of millions of dead Native Americans and countless thousands to millions of African Americans. And anybody who can't recognize that and speak to that truth, you will never heal the wounds of this nation. Dave Chappelle said it best in his special on Netflix, the one where he's in the basement and he's being all real. I love Dave Chappelle. And he was talking about the Me Too movement and Hollywood, and how women had bad guys scared, and how, you know, Harvey Weinstein and all these gross people who were molesting and raping people, throwing them in jail, good on you. And he wanted to know when it stops. Like, when does it stop? When do you stop persecuting, or not persecuting, holding people accountable, obviously, but, you know, there are some sins that are more egregious than others. And when does it stop? When do you stop trying to just be a mob and throw everyone under the bus? And when do you start actually affecting change and trying to heal? And what he said was Nelson Mandela and all the apartheid in Africa, they all had to come together and they all had to say, hey, this is what we did. This is what we did. They aired it all out in the open, and then the healing process could begin. Exactly. And that is the number one problem with this country, is we still to this day refuse to acknowledge the bad things that we have done.
Well, a lot of people even get angry. A lot of white people get angry when you want to have the conversation. They're right. Like, the only way racism goes away is if everybody stops talking about it. Didn't you see the Morgan Freeman quote? Like, I've had that conversation at least a dozen times with different white people, and like, oh, well, you know, it's better nowadays than it was, don't you think? I'm like, no, I mean, I'm still followed around stores when I go shopping, and I'm still looked at as a threat. And I get in an elevator with a white lady. She usually clutches her purse. Like, I'm going to snatch her purse. Like, I have no interest in your purse, lady. Or they'll like extra chirp their car when we're in the parking lot. Like, didn't you see me park my car next to your car? How much sense does it make me jump out of my car into your car and leave my car with all the evidence there? Like, unless I stole that car too. I just think that's so stupid. Like, right. So much irrational fear. And it's propagated by years of conditioning. And that's what we need to get rid of. And we have to have conversations about it.
Right. And it has to start from the top down. It has to start with, this is for all cases, it has to start with from the top branches of the government down, like recognizing it. And that's the biggest thing, is a lot of the government is meant to divide us because they don't want to admit all the bad shit that they've done. But there needs to be this reckoning for not just our country, but for any country that's developing or developed, to recognize its faults and what it's done to its citizens and its indigenous peoples and whoever else that it's hurt. And until we do that, there's not going to be any type of reconciliation or peace. The sad thing about Africa is, you know, they had Nelson Mandela and all the apartheid stopped, and then the US went in and started messing it all up again because we don't want peace in the world. And so that is why the subject of this kind of branches off of the description of the ontological expansiveness. And we'll get into it on future episodes when we talk about stuff like this, but it's white people wanting to own everything, which is what the US government is. It's what the British government was. It's what Rome was. They want endless expansion. They want to own everything and everybody, and anything that isn't white should either be burned or integrated into that society. And until white people learn that that's a demon that has been plaguing them for several millennia, the world's not going to get better. We're going to have mass consumption. We're going to have destruction of the environment, and we're going to have needless suffering among people of all different backgrounds and ethnicities. And it's something that we need to bring into the broader consciousness.
All right. So I think that's a good question to leave people with, is how do you feel about minorities if you are white? How do you feel about yourself?
Right.
And like, how do we end this needless ignorance? And So sorry to have a depressing episode, but I feel it was educational. I feel like it'll leave some people enlightened that weren't already. A lot of shit went down in our past that we don't talk about in schools, and you know, we need to keep the conversation going in order to heal.
Yes. Let's make the world better for, it's corny, but let's make the world better for our children so that they don't have to deal with all this bullshit. I really, in my old age and being a parent and stuff like that, I'm really not that old, but in being a parent, I've learned that, and I used to hate that because I used to love being all dark and misanthropic and stuff, but love is really the answer to everything. Love one another. And treat people like you want to be treated. You know, I know that's like a Bible verse, but it's really just an old Adam. Well, treat people the way you would want to be treated. And it also starts with self-love too, because if you hate yourself, you're going to treat people the way you treat yourself. So love yourselves, love your families, go give, you know, your mom, your dad, your kids a hug. And we're going to end it on a mushy note. So this has been, what did we call this one?
I like torches and pitchforks, black fiends and white mobs.
Okay. This is episode 10.
Negro fiends.
If you're listening to this, because we're working on getting just MP3 formats, you can find us on the YouTube at Cerebral Flex. You can find Nam1 Sakati on SoundCloud. I have a YouTube channel, Jareth RR Blackstar. Have some videos in the pipeline. We'll be posting them eventually. And we love you all. Thank you. And we will see you on the next one.
Wait.
Oh,
hit
like.
Hit the like button. Make sure to subscribe. Have a good day.
Have a good day.